I'd like to call the March 20th meeting of the Legacy Funding Division to order. And we do have a quorum, and so I think we'll proceed right away to the March 14th minutes. Representative Torkelson, have you had time to peruse the minutes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I reviewed the minutes, and I move their approval.
Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes passed. Today, what we're going to do, at least the plan, is to use House File 2430 as the vehicle bill. This is the rulemaking website bill. I will move that. Then I will move a delete all amendment, which is essentially most of the bill. We will discuss that today, and then tomorrow. Also, I think I have four amendments here that will be posted or have been posted now, and tomorrow we will discuss and hopefully add these amendments to the bill, and then we will have it all together and we'll vote on it, and it'll be a fine piece of legislation. A simple little bill. And so that's the plan anyway. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, would you mind explaining again? We have the delete all amendment today?
Yes. But we're not going to vote on it.
Okay. And then the other amendments that are here, we're not going to...
They will be... We can discuss them today if we have time. We can discuss them today, and then we will vote on them tomorrow. They didn't meet the 24-hour rule.
I see.
And then we will vote on them tomorrow, and then it'll be should be done. There's a major piece, not so long, but a major piece of the bill is the. The one that Representative Torkelson and Representative Wagenius have been working on, and that will be tomorrow. So then we need to have this done tomorrow because it needs to be moving on. It's already scheduled for the next committee, and so we've got to move with it.
And the Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Murphy.
The 2430, the, is that still $35,000?
Yes.
So then there's the DE... One amendment added to 2430.
Yes. Thank you. Representative Murphy.
And then there's the other two amendments?
Let me count. One, two, three. There are four other amendments that we'll do tomorrow. One is the one that deals with Northwoods and also the water invasive species part. There's Representative Keel's amendment, which is a Department of Administration technical amendment. Representative Westrom's amendment, which, strangely enough, may be the most controversial, dealing with innovative technology that utilizes effluent from a commercial water treatment system. And then Representative Dill's amendment, which deals essentially with RFPs and grants of less than $150,000 in public radio. So, with that, I will move House File 2430 be passed and referred to the Committee on Environment. And to get the bill in the order that we wish, I will also move the DE1 amendment. Those in favor signify by saying aye of the amendment.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Thank you. So, just a real brief summary in my part, and then we will have testifiers in the table in the front. Article 1 deals with the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage portion of the bill, the 99,920,000. Article 2, the Clean Water Fund, which I'm assuming is $6 million. Frankly, it's so hot from the presses, I haven't been able to look at the amendment. Article 3 deals with availability of appropriations under property acquisitions. Article 4 deals with the arts, history, culture portion, $1,715,000. Then we have commemoration for the U.S. Dakota War of 1862. And I will say this about the bill, that all funds increase the bottom line from where we were last year. The balances have all increased. The bill reserves are now, I'll just say what they are. Outdoor heritage is at 3.4%, clean water 4.3%, parks and trails 5.5%, arts, history, culture 3.2%. So we have increased our bottom line numbers, and we have put together a bill. So with that, Representative McNamara, would you Representative Torkelson?
Yes, sir.
Looks like you're taking the witness stand. Yes.
My pleasure.
I think Mr. Becker will be willing to help you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I assume you would like me to speak to Article 1 of the bill of
yes.
the DE. I will do that gladly. There have really been very few changes from the bill that was presented to this committee some time ago. I believe the biggest change is in the Mississippi Northwoods project. I'm looking for the page. I'm not finding it readily, but that change would take $2 million off of that project, reducing it from $14 million down to $12 million, and that $2 million would then be added to the $5.5 million, if my memory serves correctly, that was designated for the Mississippi North
page,
on
page six.
Line 6.13, and that $2 million then would go towards the barrier amount that was designated originally at 5.5, raising that to 7.5. I may not have those numbers perfectly correct, but I believe that's from my memory. Otherwise, I believe the bill is as we heard it earlier, unless I have missed something.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Representative Wiginius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it time for questions about
yes.
this section? We had some discussion on page 2 on the Prairie Recovery Project last time. And one of the things that, if my memory, now it's been a while, serves correctly, we are allowing money for buying fences so people can graze cows within some of this land. Is my memory right on that?
I would ask Mr. Becker.
Representative Torkelson?
Mr. Becker would care to respond.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiginius, there is money for fencing, of perimeter fencing, not internal paddock or that sort of fencing.
Representative Wiginius.
Mr. Chair, I've been thinking about this. So, and how this possibly fits under our Constitution. So, it's obviously not a forest or a wetland or a prairie. This is going to be in the habitat category because we're not buying native prairie here. So, it's the habitat, and it's not habitat for fish, and it's not habitat for game because we're actually trying to fence the game out and fence the cows in. So then it's probably not for wildlife either because we've got a fence out keeping things from coming in. So I've been thinking about the Constitution and thinking it's habitat for fish, game, wildlife, and cows. And it's not. So I am wondering about how we can justify spending, not that we couldn't justify spending this money from some other account, but spending money from this account for pasture for cows. And then we get, of course, to the question of competing with your neighbors who are leasing their land, and that's another question that I have about this. But let's talk about the constitutional one first.
Mr. Becker, talk about the wild cows.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, the council heard testimony that grazing was a recognized tool in the toolbox for grassland and prairie management. The project is to manage native prairie and grassland, primarily native prairie, and surrounding grassland. So I think that the council took it at face value that this is a recognized tool for managing grassland and native prairie through intensive short-term grazing as a substitute for fire.
Representative Guineas?
But my understanding is that in practicality, there isn't that much native prairie here. There's some native prairie, and it's just not fences around native prairie, which you can manage by grazing. But managing, but what we're really doing is fencing out wildlife. Okay, so you're saying that it does not fall under that section. It's not habitat section. It is prairie, and that is the only thing we are doing here. But that's not where grasslands are. Grasslands are in the habitat section. Prairie and grasslands are different. So you're saying we're going to use these fences around grasslands. Grasslands can be habitat for game and wildlife, but I've never heard that grazing is the management style for that. That is a new, I've heard it for prairie, but we didn't have grasslands when the bisons were here. We had prairie.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for being late. Representative Wagenius, it was our intent here to offer one more tool in the toolbox that, Director Becker has said, that we would have grazing. We've had some real success with intense grazing on grasslands, prairies, for control specifically. Sometimes we may not be able to use fire, or it may be a good alternative. The idea was the commissioner has talked about, the commissioner of DNR Landwehr has talked about a goal of enrolling more public lands and utilizing grazing. And this, the idea was that we could incorporate this with the idea that it would be something that would have revenue. It would be able to collect revenue for the grazing, that would then be able to pay for any additional fencing that would be necessary, and that would just be a tool that would be available. It may not be appropriate in some cases. It may work in some cases. Maybe there would be some reasons why we wouldn't be able to use fire for some reason in a particular case. There's been some examples of real success with grazing, and we just thought this was good for that to be something that we move forward.
Representative Wagenius?
Talk to us a little bit about the, this is money we're giving to a nonprofit, which will now be competing with a profit for the farmer next door, who doesn't have the state subsidized land.
How does that affect that farmer next door? We don't have that much grazing in Minnesota.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wagenius, it would be the hope that we would be utilizing neighboring farmers with the movement of livestock and such. It would be logistically make most sense to work with local farmers and allow them to be the ones to use the land for grazing. And that, I think that was the original thought on the idea. I think Representative Swazinski's got a bill that deals with this similar issue. So the idea that it would be local farmers be able to do it.
So they're going to give...
Representative Wagenius.
So they're going to walk their cows down Highway 27 to this and put them in for grazing? I don't know how you move. I mean, this is not the Wild West anymore. I love the idea, but it is not. So we move cows down Highway 27, herd them down, and move them into the Nature Conservancy plot for 6 weeks, and then herd them over to Joe's farm? What is going on here?
They could just graze along the ditch as they move along. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, I was actually trying to figure out if you were serious or not, that do they really move them that way? I happened to, when we make our, I guess it's our second trip to South Dakota, we usually do every year, it's about the time the farmer is moving his cattle there. Granted, that's a little different situation. There they actually move them about 10 miles. The old Wild Wild West, they use a combination of four-wheelers and horses, but they still do it that way. Mr. Chair, and certainly you and Representative Erdahl and Representative Torkelson both, Mr. Chair, excuse me, and Representative Torkelson both know we still do move cattle. Certainly, even I know that growing up in used to be out in the sticks, Hastings, we saw them move cattle, sometimes maybe only a short distance, literally across the road. And I think most of us, maybe we haven't. Maybe many of the urban or suburban members haven't seen actually where people are blocking the road and letting the cattle cross. But Representative Wagenius, they may move them by truck, but they could move them by the old-fashioned way of walking them down the road with a cattle dog or a four-wheeler chasing them.
Representative Wagenius.
Okay. It seems just a little out of line to me because we don't have that many cattle grazing in Minnesota anymore, for one. Number two, we don't know that we have native prairie next to a farmer who has some cattle that farmer wants to graze. So what's our priority here? Buying the native prairie or finding a farmer who wants to move some cattle onto some land that's been public purchased with public dollars?
Representative McNamara?
Representative Wagenius, I would say the prairie is a higher priority if I was to say a priority, but this is just a tool that I think could potentially work, and it's a pretty flexible one, hopefully.
Representative Wagenius?
No,
you're done.
Wait for the next
okay.
section.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McNamara, Mr. Becker. I think I have it down. We're buying land. The county is going to manage it. It's going to have several different purposes. Am I correct?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you talking about with the county ownership? I'm assuming you're talking about Mississippi Northwoods?
Mm-hmm.
I think what you've said so far, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, what you said so far is true.
Mr. Becker, at the last meeting, Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, at the last meeting I talked about whether the state was going to retain any credits, wetland credits or carbon credits, and you emailed me an answer of what you found. I would like that on the record.
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, the Representative Murphy, the answer that I provided you was that the mineral rights are intact and connected with the land that will be public land. I think that depends on whether it's county-owned or state-owned who owns those underlying mineral rights, that they will be public land.
Representative Murphy?
And Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, in the, on this land, how will people know whether it's state land or county land?
Mr. Becker?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, it'll be signed. It'll be mapped. It'll be designated in any brochures or written material to deal with the property.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker,
Jim Murphy,
does the land, is it intermingled? Is there some county, some state then?
Mr. Becker.
And then the county is managing the whole thing as one?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, the neighboring land is county forest to the north and to the south. There's also county land used for dump. There's also land used for the airport that is adjacent to this.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy.
Representative McNamara.
It's the Brainerd Airport, and I got to be honest, I don't know the actual ownership, but it's the Brainerd Airport to the east. And as Mr. Becker said, it's county land to what I would call west and north. And the Highway 210 frontage most of the south side, but a little bit of this property crosses the road and is actually on the south side of 210, I think 9 of the 2,000 acres.
Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, that it's part of the land. It's a great find. That's what it's a great find. We can't let it go. We need it. It's pristine. But it's going to have be merged with or part of land that has a dump on it and an airport.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to return to the grazing topic for a few minutes before we move back to Mississippi Northwoods. First, we do have lots of cattle grazing in the state of Minnesota, not so much in my part of the state, but in more northern parts of the state. There's lots of cattle grazing going on today. In fact, it's a great opportunity for a young farmer who is trying to find his way into farming. Grazing is a rather inexpensive way to get started in farming, and it's something that I think we should encourage. And it's my understanding that grazing is a valuable tool for not only managing prairies but also for managing grasslands. There are many groups that espouse to this now. It's been a kind of a revelation over the last few years, but DNR now uses grazing quite regularly to maintain the quality of habitat, and I believe some of our NGOs also support this particular practice on grasslands and prairies in the state. And finally, to the issue of fencing, to insinuate that a cattle fence would keep any wildlife in or out of a piece of property is, to me, rather ridiculous. I can't think of any species of wildlife, with perhaps the exception of a buffalo, and they're not wild anymore, that would be kept in or out of a space by a cattle fence.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a follow-up to Mr. Becker based on the last time we heard this bill also. And we talked about the authority of the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council to approve a plan, and whether there was constitutional authority for you to approve a plan. And I noticed this is language is in this bill still in the, you know, you have the A9, it's in there, and it's also on page 6 of the DE. And that's at the bottom of 6.36, and then on to 7.7. It says that the Lasard Sam's Council has to approve it. And so I asked House Research for an opinion about the authority of the Lasard Sam's Council to approve anything. And the very clear answer that came back is that that's not constitutional, because the Lasard Sam's Council is advisory in nature and hasn't been given any kind of authority by the legislature or anything else to make approval of these types of things. So I wonder, given that we're going to take action on the bill, not today, but I wonder if you'd be open to changing that language so that it puts it in line with constitutional authority. And, you know, something like it shouldn't be allowed unless the Lasard Sam's Council has advised on it or weighed in on it or given its opinion about it or something like that, as opposed to the word approve. Because I just don't think you have the authority to do that.
Mr. Becker?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, my understanding is that there's precedent for this in other parts of the statute. I would be more than willing to discuss that.
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, there may be precedent as a matter of action, but there certainly isn't precedent in legal authority for the constitutionality of taking that action. So if we need to address that in other parts of the statute as well, I think that's a good idea. But I'd hate to continue down that path on this provision or any other provision until, we might not be able to fix the whole problem tomorrow, but we could at least avoid making it worse by continuing with this practice, because the precedent is there, but it isn't constitutional, and it's not even close.
Mr. Becker?
Mr. Chair, I have no comment.
Well, Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, I guess the question is, are you or Representative McNamara or Representative Erdahl or anybody else open to dealing with the legal question raised by nonpartisan staff about the authority of the Lasard Sam's Council to approve anything? That they're an advisory council, not a commission or something else that has any kind of statutory authority.
Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Winkler, I certainly would be open if you have some ideas on how we could. I don't think a landscaper is going to go after a lawyer. If you've got some lawyer questions, we should deal with them.
Representative Winkler?
The legislature, it doesn't really matter. No, we're experts on everything, according to us. Mr. Chair.
I would suggest, Representative Winkler, perhaps that you and Representative McNamara, Mr. Becker, and our nonpartisan staff work on some language that might be acceptable.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Continue, Mr. Becker, or questions, wherever we are right now. Questions? Any other section? Anything?
Other sections in the bill.
Yeah. We can continue now.
Okay.
Representative Wiginius.
I have picked up that there are two provisions in this bill that I don't think that were not in the original bill, and we haven't had hearings on. There's certainly some things we've had hearings on. One of them is on page 17, this public grazing program that we are directing the Commissioner of Natural Resources to do. And then on page 30, this direct grant to an ethanol plant in Stevens County of $1 million. Besides those two things that I have seen that we haven't had hearings on, are there other provisions in this bill, in this delete-all, that we have not had hearings on?
Representative Wiginius, I think Representative McNamara can answer that.
I do have one additional provision. It's been brought up, and I'm not positive in this committee. There's the deletion of the requirement for written notification to the Minnesota Conservation or Conservation Corps, I believe. I do know Mr. Price is in the audience. I've talked to him and asked him if he would be open to the idea of no longer requiring the written requirement from so many folks to Mr. Becker's office, and Mr. Price is open to that idea. I'm not sure, Representative Wagenius, if we've had that discussion or not. That would be the other provision in regards to the Lessard Sams that I believe has not been discussed yet.
Representative Wagenius?
I actually don't know what you're talking about, so it would be good to discuss that. Do you want to discuss these now,
Yes, Representative Wagenius, we can now. We do have, regarding the ethanol plant, we do have an amendment on that one. So you can discuss the amendment if you wish,
Well, it's difficult for Mr. Chair to discuss either one because we haven't had any testimony from anybody about both have become direct grants, as I see it, and it is not our habit to give $1 million out of any of these funds to somebody without a hearing on it. I mean,
Would you like to discuss these two things now? You want to discuss the?
We can. It's up to you, Mr. Chair. But I'm pointing it out that it's not our norm to. There's been no hearing, but beyond no hearing, that's the process. The substance is that we often give agencies a pot of money so people can have competitive grants. This then changes that precedent too, because this is obviously picked out an ethanol plant in Stevens County to give $1 million to. I assume this is clean water money. So I think we should have some background on this.
Representative Wagenius, I think you bring up a good point. We should air this issue. I believe this is a provision provided by Representative Westrom. I don't believe that he is here, but we could get him, and I think we'll round him up here for you. But also, I know that he's discussed and worked with Mr. Kudelka about this, and perhaps Mr. Kudelka would care to come down and discuss it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just as Mr. Kudelka is coming down, it's my understanding that this $1 billion was actually awarded to this plant in Stevens County last year under the terms of the grant, and because of the drought and other issues, they were unable to utilize these funds. And so this is it's a little different because of that, and I believe Mr. Kudelka will inform us in more detail.
Mr. Kudelka, identify yourself, please.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Kudelka. I'm the legislative director with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. The grant program that's being discussed here on page 29 and 30, this is a beneficial reuse program which would use wastewater or stormwater in exchange for using groundwater for ethanol facilities. And $1 million was set aside for grants to ethanol facilities, which a number of them could compete for. When the program was initially created a number of years ago, it was only wastewater. And the agency put out an RFP. There were no takers on it. After discussions with one of the ethanol plants, it was suggested that if it was made available to stormwater to replace the use of groundwater or other surface water, that that may open it up for more folks. That was a change made last year in the legacy bill, and during the interim, the agency did put out an RFP for the issue. However, again, no one came forward with a proposal to use those dollars, so no awards were made at that time. The agency did talk to a number of producers, ethanol producers, on why that was the reason. We did submit that report to the legislature on why we got feedback that money was use. One of them was the stormwater with the drought-like conditions in parts of Minnesota in the fall. It was discovered that it's not a reliable source of water, which was one of the reasons we heard back from ethanol plants that it wasn't something that they were willing to give up groundwater or surface water for. The specific language here in the bill on page 30 is something that the agency's been working with to get more information from the ethanol plant in Stevens County. As it's written here, we do have concerns. We've had some communications with Representative Westrom. We've had communications with the plant in question. Our opposition of as it's written currently is that from what we can tell from the technology being used, it would be stuff that's needed to make the permit compliant with their permits, which other plants in the industry and others in other industries have used their own dollars for. Having had those discussions with this ethanol plant along with Representative Westrom, we are looking at ways that may be more palatable to the agency. Creating the idea of using less groundwater is something that the agency is supportive of. The actual grant program was replacing groundwater use by wastewater or stormwater. In this case, stormwater and wastewater is not a viable option. So we are looking at what we would as an agency be okay with for reduction in use in groundwater. And so this is something we're just now starting to look at. We're probably at the beginning of this process. What type of percent reduction would make sense to make it something that would be a good use of clean water fund dollars? What type of matches would be required? The current program has a 50% match. Who would be available to apply for the dollars? And in general, what type of sustainable water policy would we want to build the program around? So that's something that we're working right now. We've had initial discussions, as I mentioned, with Rips and Westrom and the ethanol facility. Our goal would be to have some outcomes tied to any dollars that's given from the Clean Water Fund to show that there's sustainable water practices with it.
Thank you, Mr. Gadelkin. Just a couple of comments first. Now, so this money that was granted a year ago through a competitive grant process by the PCA, is that correct?
Mr. Chair and committee members, correct. And there were no takers.
And what we have now is basically a request to use this money in a little bit different way. And we have the bill here, and then we do have an amendment. Is the amendment more palatable to you? Are you reaching any type of agreement with Representative Westrom?
Mr. Chair and committee members, I think right now, as I mentioned a little earlier, we're still at the beginning of this process. We've talked some broad concepts of where the agency would feel more comfortable if there were some goals or outcomes that would be reached by the use of these dollars. So at this point, we haven't come to an agreement on any legislative language, but that's something we're working at.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, the original language that we had for this, for ethanol plants using wastewater treatment, it was an original grant program. It's maybe 4 or 5 years old, to encourage the siting of a plant at a place where they could use the wastewater from a city or a city, rather than using groundwater. And the example used was that of a plant in Fargo that used the Fargo wastewater treatment system to run an ethanol plant, and it was so beneficial to those folks that they ran a pipe for like 19 miles to use that water. So we were trying, since Minnesota seemed to be behind North Dakota, and that's never a good thing, we put out this request for a proposal. It was not as a retrofit to use a commercial water treatment system, so we're going pretty far out, far away from the original intent of the legislation,
which was to encourage better siting of a facility rather than it was to encourage siting. As am I understanding this, that Stevens County ethanol plant is already an operating plant. Can I ask that question, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Guinness.
Is this plant already in operation, Mr. Gadelka?
Mr. Gadelka?
Mr. Chair and committee members, that is correct. This is an existing facility. When we did put out a questionnaire on why the dollars weren't seeked the first and second time, one of the issues did come back. As you had mentioned, it would be something, a plant that's starting up would be more likely to use. However, we've not had any plant come forward in that regard. And the qualifications on page 30 here does allow for three existing facilities to operate and use that dollars currently.
Mike, good, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guinness.
Thank you. I would just observe that one of the reasons we probably didn't have any new sightings of plants is that's when the economy went down the tubes. So I don't think it's a particularly good read of what might happen in the future. So as we are looking forward to new ethanol plants, I would not want to for us to be in a position of using money that could benefit a really good siting of a plant for something that's less useful to Minnesotans. This is Minnesotans' money.
Mr. Gadelka.
Chair and committee members, that is something we're in the process of doing. Because of the lack of submittals for the set-aside for ethanol, and now it appears one of our grants that went to a project on the other that was open to larger numbers is maybe falling through. The agency's in the process of going out and determining what type of projects, what type of retooling, or where we need to target these dollars in the future. So that is something we're looking at in the interim to make suggestions for the next budget.
Representative Westrom, do you have any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Speaker,
right.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. I like that.
You like the sound of that. Mr. Chair, I do have some constituents from the Denco 2 plant that one of Mick Miller could offer some brief comments if the committee has any questions, Mr. Chair. But the issue, Representative Wagenius talked about this was actually appropriated in 2009, as I understand or recall. And the issue has become that stormwater. Last year it was amended. Initially it was talked about wastewater. The city of Morris, in conjunction with Denco, had made an application, and the definition of wastewater wasn't broad enough, or at least there was questions about whether stormwater is wastewater, and we amended it last year to include that. Since we did that, there was more testing done, more results, and also a very dry fall that revealed concern about having enough supply of water if we go through a six-month stretch without rain. The plant is still working on reducing their use of groundwater, Mr. Chair and members, and so the language in front of you, while if it doesn't, it needs more work with the PCA, we're working with them and wanting to pursue that resolution, but it gets us clearly in the direction that would have the plant using less groundwater, recycling or reusing some of the water that they're already using, and being a pilot project and a demonstration that could be used elsewhere. The idea is to do things that aren't being done in the commercial market right now with this, and we have several plants in the state that, while they're not real old, Morris was the first plant, dry mill plant in the state of Minnesota. There's other plants that may need to reduce the consumption of groundwater, and I know that's an issue Representative Bagenia has worked on for several years. And so that's the kind of the history of the language here. It would be very beneficial and valuable to the plant to be able to continue on a project that would use these funds towards that goal and towards improvements for the plant, which is what they were intending to do with the language we changed last year.
Thank you, Representative Westrom. So, I'm correct, this started 2009, and we made some adjustments in 2010, and you're looking for something more this year, something different.
Another modification, Mr.
Yes.
Chair.
You have, would you identify yourself with the tape, please?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mick Miller, General Manager for Denco 2 in Morris, Minnesota.
Do you have any comments, Mr. Miller, or do you want to proceed to questions?
No, I think Representative Westrom did a great job of explaining really what we're looking at doing. We've looked at the beneficial reuse program twice now, and I think what we're really after is trying to figure out a way to take any form of wastewater, whether that be wastewater from a municipal, from the city, stormwater, or even wastewater generated at the processing facility itself, ultimately, and reuse the water to offset and reduce the amount of groundwater we're currently using for our process.
Representative Winkler?
So, Mr. Chair, and maybe Representative Westrom, I want to make sure I understand exactly what's happening. So we had a grant program that was created in 2009, but there were no takers. And then in either 2010 or 2011, there were further changes to the grant program, and yet again, there have been no takers. And now we're in 2012, and we're scrapping the grant program and instead directly appropriating funds for a pilot project at this specific site. Is that essentially what has happened?
Mr. Miller or Representative Westrom?
Mr. Chair, let me take a crack at this first. Representative Winkler, you are to my left, aren't you?
Always.
Generally speaking.
Yes, well, his microphone system is such that I can't tell when you, unless you like Representative Kahn, who does.
I'm everywhere.
Right? Representative Westrom, all of your DFL colleagues are to your left here today.
Figuratively, as Representative Winkler. Essentially, the dollars would go to where they were going to go last year. It was 011 and not 010 when the change was made. They were pursuing with the city on a joint project on the stormwater. That has proved not to be cost effective or as beneficial as the initial plans appeared that they would be to reduce the use of groundwater. They would pursue reducing the use of groundwater, as you heard Mr. Miller just talking about, with these funds and in a different way than collecting stormwater.
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, just so I can understand, the 2011 legislation, you said that it was the money was to go to this specific plant for this reason. How was that was that through a direct appropriation, or was that through a grant program again?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, the original language was drafted in such that there was only three plants in the state, if they were even looking at a project to reduce groundwater that could qualify, and so that's what narrowed it in the first place to Morris, Benson, and Winnebago. Benson and Winnebago were not interested and were not looking at doing these types of projects. Morris has been the one plant on the radar. And to back up just a little bit, what incubated the interest and started the interest was Morris and a group of local farmers and investors and business owners bought the plant back in August of 2010 and restarted the restarted the grinding and making of ethanol. It had been put on what they call cold idle through some of the economic tough times in 2009. They bought the plant back, and so it's owned and operated, and they brought the 30 jobs back, or there was 12 that were continuing to be idle, but they brought it back to full force. And so that's what incubated and started and initiated the interest and the pursuing of the improving the plant as well as reducing the consumption and use of groundwater.
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if Representative Westrom can answer this or not. It wasn't totally, I mean, I guess the implicit statement has been in the committee so far that the PCA does not support this. So I'm wondering if you could, if that's the confirm that that's true, and then explain if this is such a good thing, why the PCA doesn't support this appropriation.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, they haven't said that in our meetings. They have said they're not at a point of saying they can support this because we need to continue the discussions. They have indicated that they want to make sure that it doesn't just replace current technology and do something that is already out there widespread in the marketplace as well. If we need to modify the language such to give them more comfort or to ensure that that can be done, we've talked to them about doing that. Sometimes when you do a pilot project, your result doesn't always match your hypothesis. Sometimes it's better, sometimes it's worse, sometimes other things are discovered. That's part of the risk and the benefit of doing a project such as this or other projects that we do across the state. And so those are some of the things that I think the PCA, we've only been in these discussions for a few days or a week at the most, and I would ask the committee to make the modifications, but we are going to work with the PCA, and if there's a different way or some language that they suggest is more helpful, we are open to looking at putting that in. So.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, final question for Representative Westrom. If Morris is the only plant that's interested in doing this, what value is the pilot project for anyone else?
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, because there's 12 or 13 other plants in the state that may need to go down this road at a future date, Morris being the first dry mill plant is probably the oldest and the soonest to need or to look at redoing some of their systems. Undoubtedly, other plants will be needing to do this in the future. And, you know, there's always risk with being a pilot project. And, you know, Representative Wagenius has talked about the economics haven't been real great for a lot of these plants, and so I'm sure in 5 years there will be a different landscape of plants and level of interest than there is right now. But if you've got proven data or information that now can be shared and used also elsewhere, it can be a win-win.
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, I said it was the last question, but Representative Westrom inspired me further.
He knows that. He's been known for that.
He's so inspirational, he's going to the Senate, my understanding. What would happen if the state, if the taxpayers didn't give $1 million to perform this pilot project? You've stated that this could serve essentially as an example for plants in the future, but this is a private enterprise, or at least it's not a state enterprise. What if the state didn't provide $1 million? Is this something that could be done without help from the taxpayer?
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask Mr. Miller to comment, but I'll just briefly Representative Winkler, I think something different would end up happening, and you wouldn't have a system to with the intent and the outcome of using less groundwater would probably be what is pursued instead.
Mr. Miller?
members of the committee, Mr. Chair, yeah, I believe that is accurate. There's an opportunity in front of us today to take an older facility that has, unfortunately, some of the worst groundwater in the state. Our conductivity levels are through the roof, and we're always looking for ways whether to reduce our operating costs so that we can survive long term. It's all about, it's truly about the 30 jobs in Morris, and when we bought the plant in 2010, we're looking for all sorts of innovative ways to make our plant basically able to compete in today's market. It's an older facility, it needs upgrades, and those upgrades are anything from reducing our operating costs by the amount of water we consume per gallon of ethanol produced, or the amount of energy utilized to produce a gallon of ethanol. So, you know, we're here today to try to maximize and get our facility set up for the long term.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Miller, I certainly applaud your effort to come to the legislature and to represent the plant and the workers and the jobs that are represented by it. You know, I guess I'm just left a little bit unsure if the $1 million is to support a pilot project that will give us information about that could be valuable for future projects, or if the $1 million is to just reduce the groundwater consumption at this particular plant, or if the $1 million is used to support upgrades at an ethanol plant in Morris. Because, you know, what we have to do is balance our priorities, and if we've got $1 million to spend to reduce groundwater, we have to decide if the amount of groundwater use that we are reducing is worth it on a dollar per gallon basis or whatever it is. And we have to look at the value of the data that would be generated from a pilot project. And then, of course, we have to decide if the $1 million is important for the state to spend to protect jobs in Morris or not. So I'm not clear, ultimately, if this is a jobs provision, pilot project provision, or a groundwater reduction provision. And it's not necessarily to you. It's more of a question for Representative Westrum.
Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, I think part of all of your answers could be part of the answer, or the answer. Conserving groundwater achieves several benefits. Mr. Miller talked about it. It lowers your operating costs. It cleans up the water, or has less water discharging out of the plant. They would reuse water that they've used for processing a second time and then discharge it, reducing the amount of groundwater they would be consuming in the first place. And it would also improve the efficiency of the plant, strengthening the business in the sense of keeping the jobs and keeping the plant operating strong into the future.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum, I just so often reminded of your passionate speeches in defense of private industry and the free market at the legislature. And, if this was a groundwater provision, I guess that would be maybe worth the taxpayer dollar. But I think we have to be mindful of letting the free market live and thrive without interference from government, especially government grants. So I guess it's still the purpose and the value is not clear to me, although it's, of course, entirely appropriate to come and advocate to the legislature for taxpayer help for industries in your hometown.
I think I'd like to move on to a different topic here, but I'll let you have the final word, Representative Wagenius, but let's try to move along here. I will suggest that there are other options that are, to just still do some things with this as we move along. I would suggest that Representative Westrum, Mr. Miller, Mr. Kudelka, if you can get together and try to come up with some solution that can work here, it would be good. That would be a little more palatable to the PCA. Representative Wagenius.
Yes, Mr. Miller, you alluded to your problem with the groundwater without describing it for us. And since this is about groundwater, just describe the groundwater problem to us.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, really, like many processes, our industry uses a lot of groundwater, which we all know is becoming more and more of a precious commodity. So this project is really simple at heart. It's just looking at ways to become innovative, to take advantage of, you know, how can we make our process more efficient, which ultimately should benefit and trickle down throughout our industry. You know, Minnesota is a leading state in ethanol production. Well, one of the leaders. There's 21 plants in the state. There's an opportunity here with a pilot project to prove that if we can bring new technology to the table and help facilities use less groundwater per gallon of ethanol production, there's an opportunity for that really to have a trickle down effect.
Mr. Chairman, a follow up.
Reserve Guinness.
You said the word. You used another word when you were describing your groundwater, like its conductivity?
Yes, conductivity.
Mr. Miller.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's just a general term for the overall quality of the water. And typically the worser or less quality of the water is, the process typically is going to use more, whether that be an ethanol plant or a tire factory or processing chickens. It's all related to quality of water. And in Morris, we have some of the worst water in the area.
Representative Gaines.
Worse in which way?
Mr. Miller.
Just to give you an idea, industry averages are probably around 3 to 4 gallons of water per gallon of ethanol, and many are continuing to look for ways to reduce that. In Morris, we're about 6.65 gallons per 6.65 gallons of water per gallon of ethanol production. So our first focus is to obviously reduce that to get to industry standards, but while doing that, proving that there are technologies out there that if it can help us go from 6 gallons to 4, can it help a plant go from 4 to 2?
Okay, thank you.
I think we got there.
Mr. Miller, Representative Wagini? No, sorry, just used to saying that. Representative Westrum.
Representative Wester.
If you have no further comments on this, you're excused.
I don't. Mr. Chair, I think you were thinking tomorrow the amendments would come up for a vote.
Yes.
With my constituents here today, I appreciate you taking the time to have the committee discussion.
Thank you, Representative Westrum. Other comments? Other items? Representative Wagenius. What?
Do the work today. There was another provision in the bill that did not get any hearing, and that was the one on page 17. Is there something somebody would like to say about that? I don't know where it came from.
Public grazing program, prairie grasslands. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Wagenius, for mentioning that. This is a kind of modeled after a Representative Swazinski bill, and I would like to, after further discussion, Representative Wagenius, maybe I could bring the DNR down and anybody from industry that may want to speak to the bill. I have asked the DNR to work on a couple different issues, and they've come up with a somewhat of an amendment. It is an amendment, I should say. Representative Wagenius said I'd like to offer tomorrow, and maybe I could ask Mr. Meyer if he could read how that would fit in with the bill so you could hear it, and then he could talk about the program. And I'm not sure if someone from industry, I thought somebody from industry may be here also.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. Mr. Meyer, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources, thank you very much for this opportunity. This is an issue that we have been talking about some time at the Department of Natural Resources, the grazing of public lands. Commissioner Landwehr has established an in-house goal that lines up with the numbers that are in this bill. The one thing we want to clarify in the language, and there will be an amendment tomorrow, that this will be done where grazing will enhance wildlife habitat, including the management of invasive species, and also that within the goal of the program to be financially self-sufficient. This is done using cooperative farming or leasing agreements with the individual land or cattle owners. We did work with the Cattlemen's Association last year on a different piece of legislation that deals with grazing, but it dealt with grazing liability. So this is something that is important to us, and we view it as kind of a win-win on several different aspects. One, the management of these lands, burning maintaining prairie by fire, Representative Guineas, you know, is very expensive, and it does have limitations with weather. The dry weather we have right now and what's going on out there may severely hamper our ability to do a lot of prairie management, just because you can't burn when the conditions are so, right now it's so dry out, it provides a lot of challenges to us. So allowing some alternative management on that aspect. And also it helps deal with some of the conflict that we see out there with landowners and different constituent groups that think that we're buying up too much land. It allows it to continue to be used for short periods of time on a rotational basis, where it's part of a management plan. You have to remember that each unit, each wildlife management area that the department has its individual management plan that our property managers look at and say, this is the desired future condition of the property, and here's how we're going to get here, and here's what we're going to do every year or every 5 years. So it's not suitable for every piece of land. A piece of native prairie, for example, may or may not be eligible to or be a good candidate for this opportunity. So we do view this as something that we can work on, and the amendments will clarify several of those pieces that it is for wildlife habitat management.
President Bouguinius?
Thank you. In Representative Swedinsky's bill, he called for 5,000 acres of public grazing land, and it appears that this is based on his bill. But this is 50,000. How much grassland does the state own?
Mr. Maher?
Madam
falls
Chair,
in this category.
Representative Bouguinas, I can get you information specifically on that, but I can tell you right now we have about 10,000 acres that do fit within this category that are in a program. Obviously, those 10,000 acres aren't grazed every year. It's a rotational cycle, but right now we have about 10,000 acres with, as I said, an in-house goal of 50,000 from Commissioner Landon.
Any other questions of Mr. Maher? Thank you, Mr. Maher.
Thank you.
The comments, questions? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wilgenius did remind me of one other provision. I believe it was on page 27, striking some reference to the Conservation Corps of Minnesota. I wonder if Mr. Price could come down and just, for the record, speak that we did talk about this.
Okay, thank you, Representative McNamara. Mr. Price. Welcome, Mr. Price.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Len Price. I'm the Executive Director of Conservation Corps Minnesota in Iowa. The language that is on page 27, where there's a strikeout of written contact with the Lassard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, is okay with the Conservation Corps. This language, the stricken language, was part of the original bill when the legacy provisions were put together. Representative McNamara has indicated that there are some people who think that's an onerous kind of a provision. It would certainly reduce the amount of paperwork that we have to do, because we wouldn't have to make this contact with the Heritage Council staff. It's not a problem for us, but we're willing to do that, so we're okay with this.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Price? Thank you.
Thank you.
Got one. Representative Wilgenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Price. It's always difficult to be in the position you're in right now. So a recipient of money must give consideration to you. They can think about you, and they have met the standard in the statute. How much how many folks do you think might not be employed by a recipient of the money because they don't have to do any more than just think about you,
Mr.
and your
Price.
Program and your kids?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wilgenius, I'm not quite sure what you're asking me. How many how much less work would we have because they didn't contact us? Is that your question?
Representative Wagenius?
No, but with the change in standard, folks probably will contact you less. And so what impact do you think this will have on the employment of Conservation Corps folks?
Mr. Price?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wagenius and members, it's difficult for us to say in a given funding cycle how much of the appropriation for projects would come our way. There are certainly projects that are funded that are beyond our skill level. For example, since this has been in effect, Ducks Unlimited has contacted us on an annual basis almost and said, we're going to do a shallow lakes project. Here's what it's going to entail. And we would say in response, you know, we can do a lot of hands-on labor, but we don't own or operate large equipment, which would be inherent in doing this project. So we really can't be a part of this project in that aspect. If you have plantings, some kind of short bank restoration or that kind of hands-on work, we're very capable of doing that. We'd be very interested. So it's really difficult for me to respond and say, here's how much less we would get. We're certainly appreciative of all the effort that's been made on the part of the recipients of funding through the Lassard Sams Heritage Council and any other parts of the legacy funding to provide opportunities for work, which means opportunities for our core members to be engaged in this kind of work that we do.
Mr. Price, were you busy last summer?
Mr. Chairman, we were busy except for this thing called the state shutdown. That affected us, and I don't mean to get into that area, but we did.
Let's not do that.
Yeah, we did have a lot of work in the queue, but because of the shutdown, we were prohibited from working on those particular facilities or at those sites. So that did affect us. But we had a busy summer, and we engaged in all of our programs. Over 500 youth and young adults. So we're very happy with that circumstance. And a lot of the funding that helps us do that comes through this committee and this program.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you, Mr. Price.
Thank you.
Now, at this point, I'm going to ask, I'm going to move to Article 3 because I know that someone wants to comment on that. We can move back again if anyone wishes to the other articles. I believe Mr. Larson wants to make a comment.
Mr. Chair and members, Dan Larson here, representing two organizations today, the Greater Minnesota Regional Park and Trail Coalition and the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus. So thank you for letting us come and express our opinions and concerns today. In earlier on, the committee heard testimony on Representative Torkelson's bill, House File 2270, and that was a bill that eliminated the local match and per project cap on park and trail legacy grants that were granted to local governments outside the Twin Cities metropolitan area. And we're here to express disappointment to know that that provision is not a part of the omnibus bill. The local match and per project cap provisions affect no part of the funding splits to the department, to the Twin Cities metropolitan area, or to Greater Minnesota. But it does affect greatly the ability of Greater Minnesota local governments to, in effect, meet the expectations expressed by the public in the 17 public hearings that the DNR held across the state when they were building the plan, when they asked the public, what do you want of this great gift that the citizens bestowed upon us in this in the constitutional dedication and the funding for, in this case, the parks and trails. So just a reminder, the overwhelming majority of comments that the DNR heard in those public comment session was to create the highest quality projects possible. Our attempt in bringing this bill forward was to highlight the fact that this is that the per project cap of $500,000, I should explain what it is. First of all, the local match requires local governments outside the Twin City metro area to provide 25% local match on any of the fundings they receive from legacy park and trail grants. And then and then each of those projects are capped at $500,000. The cap wasn't such a concern over the course of the last several decades because there wasn't a lot of money coming to Greater Minnesota. But again, because of this gift, more money is starting to come out, and we are starting to plan for a park and trail process, and we're starting to see that this cap is a significant inhibitor towards us meeting the public goals and expectations. So maybe another couple lines on what our intentions are going forward, and that is to build a plan that recognizes each region of the state that has different intrinsic environmental and recreational value. And that plan we're going to build up is our intent. You'll see this in the fall when we come forward with our plan. Those ideas are going to come up if you're familiar with the ATP projects or process, and for your county engineers, they get together on a regional basis and they talk about what the important projects are, and then they fund those projects to the level that they can. So we're modeling our plan to the extent that we can under that same approach. So you get regional folks talking about what's important to them on a regional basis, and then there'll be some overarching administrative process. So really our goal in this is to create a process that integrates regionally, interregionally, and then also Greater Minnesota to the Twin Cities metropolitan area. I have a goal, and I talk to this with our people, of being able to ride a bicycle from Fort Snelling to Grand Marais, or from Houston County, Minnesota to Park Rapids. With the amount of funding that we're receiving in this, we think we can get this done. And in that case, build a park and trail system in this state that is equal to no other provincial or state regional park system in the world. So we're disappointed that we couldn't go forward with this. It is a significant hindrance. You heard from the Isani County Park Director, Barry Wendorf, several projects that were not going to go forward because of the local match and or the per project cap. So with that, Mr. Chair, I have Tom Schwartz. He's the Park Director for the City of New Ulm, just to talk about, again, some of those projects.
Mr. Schwartz?
It's actually Schmitz.
Schmitz.
Tom Schmitz, Director of the Department of Parks and Recreation, City of New Ulm.
Mr. Schmitz, let me just say a couple of minutes, please. I'm going to, these last 15 minutes, if there are other folks here that came just for today to testify, I want to make sure that they have a chance. So, Mr. Schmitz.
Chair, I'll keep it to just a couple minutes. I'm also the Southern Regional Representative to the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition. And I'd like to just paint a couple of brief pictures for you regarding to the cap and match hurdles that we have. One of the visions I have is to ride my bicycle from Big Stone Lake State Park to Fort Snelling State Park along our mighty Minnesota River that the DNR has and the state has already designated a state trail. The City of New Ulm took the initiative in year one of the Legacy Amendment 2009 to apply for a trail grant. And that was to design and create a segment of Minnesota River Valley State Trail in the City of New Ulm, linking two regionally significant parks, Minicon Park, Alaucon Park, and Riverside Park, the first park in New Ulm. The project was preliminarily estimated at $156,000, so we applied for a $117,000 legacy grant in year one, 2009. That was 75%, leaving the 25% local cash match of $39,000. We were awarded $100,000 instead of the $117,000 we asked for. And as we further designed the project and went through the final designs and approvals through the DNR, it seemed that expenses seemed to be rising. And by the time we were ready to move forward, it was close to $200,000. And the city council backed up and said, no, our local cash match is too significant, and we're not going to be able to move forward at this time. So we did turn back a $100,000 legacy trail grant in year one. We hope to, at some time in the future, be able to construct that Minnesota River Valley State Trail segment in and around New Ulm. I will just mention a couple of the other projects. You've heard Isani County Parks. They tried to come up with a significant regional park in the center of the county for $3 million. And the $500,000 cap maximum became not enough money to help them move forward. So that is another project that has suffered from either the maximum cap or the local match. Wright County also has a similar project, significant $24 million land acquisition project that agreed upon seller price was just over $20 million for 1,200 acres of pristine land on a number of wonderful lakes in Wright County.
Are they in Bertram? The Bertram chain of lakes?
That's my understanding, yes. And at $500,000 max cap, that's going to take 20 years to acquire that pristine land. So those are three examples of the local cash match hurdle and the per project cap hurdle that we have in Greater Minnesota.
Thank you, gentlemen. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I reviewed the section of the bill, I couldn't help but note that there is a change in here extending the acquisition date for a project in Hennepin County. To the testifier, do you have any opposition to this extension?
Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, our disappointment in not being included in the bill does not extend to opposing that provision.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just also share my disappointment that my bill was not included in your omnibus bill, and I must have done something horribly wrong to you.
Representative McNamara. I have no comment, Representative Torkelson.
I didn't expect some, Mr. Chair.
I'll save my friends from Greater Minnesota. Mr. Schmitz, you mentioned, I'm just curious, on the one in the City of New Ulm project, did the city consider scaling the project back and maybe getting it down to 133,000, then you would have only needed to put forward 33, or was the city not ready to commit anything to the project in their city?
Mr. Schmitz.
Chair and Representative, it was a half-mile trail segment that we had to link these two regionally significant parks, and scaling it back would mean that these two regionally significant parks would not be connected by a treadway. And so the decision, the City of New Ulm is fully committed to recreation and parks. We're one of the largest per capita spenders in Minnesota on recreation and parks, and the City Council gave us charges to go back, retool, re-examine other funding sources, and plan for the future. The City Council is fully committed to helping connect regional parks in and around New Ulm and in the Minnesota River Valley, and they're fully supportive to assist in funding and managing those projects.
Thank you, gentlemen. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to testify in any portion of this bill? Welcome to the committee, sir. Would you identify yourself for the tape?
Thank you. Dennis Wolf, Wolf Limousine Farms, Stevens County, Morris. I didn't know the guy, other guys from the ethanol plant were even here today. And I didn't come here with the intent to testify, but I just was going to give you, for your information, a little bit of our personal experience with grazing public lands. We've been doing it on DNR property for somewhere between 12 and 15 years. We were a pilot place to pick out to do studies on.
Sir, who paid for the fence?
We did.
Oh, thank you.
And I don't have the statistics with me because I didn't even know this committee was going on today. We were just down here to, as Farm Bureau, calling on our representatives and senators and decided to sit in here. So I don't have no numbers with me as far as their studies they found out, but we do not graze it every year. It's on a rotational basis depending on rainfall, et cetera, by what the DNR proposes. But we have been told that their wildlife production is better than what they were doing the burn method. And since that, now the last few years we're running, we're also grazing U.S. Fish and Wildlife grounds and finding the same results, and they do pay for the fence. We pay for the labor to put it in. But from my point of view as a business person and the cost of it, and I got these numbers from Fish and Wildlife. They were paying $40 an acre to have it burnt by a professional burn team, where we're now paying them a rent fee. So, I mean, it looks like to me it's a way to raise dollars to help do some of these other programs you'd like to do with them. That's all I have, but I'd field any questions if there is any.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wolf, I don't know if you have a Highway 27 in your area, but could you describe how you move the cattle from pasture to pasture?
Mr. Chairman and
Mr. Wolf.
Representative Torkelson and the rest of the committee, we do not have 27, but we have U.S. 59. Runs right through us, and we drive the cattle down the road.
Thank you. Representative McNamara.
Just a clarification, is that drive them in a semi or drive them walking?
Mr. Wolf.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, some of both, but anything under 10 miles, we herd them down the road with, which was mentioned before, four-wheelers and horses.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Wolf.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Any other one, anyone else from the public? Yes. Welcome. Identify yourself, please.
Thank you. My name is Daryl Gerber, and I'm Program Coordinator with Clean Water Action. And I just wanted to add a little bit more in our thinking on the ethanol plant project. And really some of our concerns, and these have been really worked with a number of groups over the years on developing some kind of principles of how to really look at use of the Clean Water Fund. And a couple of things that are really kind of troubling a little bit right now is not necessarily with the project itself, but is one of them is the use of any of the Clean Water Funds to comply with current law. You know, it's something that I know that I've been here several times with this committee in the past and other committees to kind of say that this should really be above and beyond what is necessary to comply with law in addition to what is already being done out there. The other part of it is just really the, particularly for the Clean Water Fund money, is the use of earmarks rather than funneling it through programs. And, you know, that's something that kind of gives us some heartburn is the fact that this is really directed to a particular project rather than through a grant, a competitive grant project. And I have spoken with the PCA about that, and did try to catch Representative Westrum, but didn't get a chance before he left.
Thank you, Mr. Green. But as I understand it, this was a grant program before. This is money that was not used.
Correct. But I think that you know, something that was touched on in some of the testimony is that may not necessarily be because it's a competitive grant program, but there are other factors, a lot of them economic, and other things. And if this is the only plant that is really ready and eligible to use this, then you know, it's still, you can still maintain the intent while still also keeping the precedent in place of kind of keeping this in through a grant program.
Thank you for your comments. Representative Torkelson.
I do not have a question for this testifier.
You're excused. You said you did or you don't?
I do not.
Okay.
Did we hear Section 7 of this bill in committee, Mr. Chair? The very last section.
What?
The very last section on page 43.
Representative Torkelson?
Yes,
we did.
We did.
Only it took a slightly different form.
I see.
This was the resolution to pardon Chasquet, and through the magic of legislative maneuvering, it became a bill. And so instead of a resolution, it's a bill. So thank you for helping me to clarify that.
I'm here to serve, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to comment or say anything from the audience, members? If not, we will have part two tomorrow. It's kind of like a continued television show. Part two tomorrow. For now, Welk King, this case is closed.